I had someone in the comments who was asking why Aaron Judge was not in the top five on right. this list. I get being excited about Aaron Judge, but, you know, Carlos Correa is number four on this list. He's been doing this for a couple of years, and Carlos Correa is 3 years younger than Aaron Judge.
Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell. I'm a writer at Baseball Prospectus. I'm joined by my usual co-host, Brett Sayer, BP's managing editor, and Mike Gianella of the BP fantasy team. We're recording this during the MLB All-Star game, which I believe is still scoreless at the moment. Dellin Betances just finished up an inning. He only walked one guy, so hashtag progress there. But how are you guys enjoying your All-Star break? And then the actual game. I know the home run derby last night was just spectacular. So how are you guys doing tonight?
I'm like the anti normal baseball writer in terms of All-Star weekend, I guess, except the futures game. I watch the futures game. I watch the home run derby. I don't watch the All-Star game. I watch the highlights when it's over.
Yeah. Is it weird to be more excited for the futures game than the actual All-Star game? Is that how you know you've kind of made it as a writer? You're like, I'm watching that.
I've been more excited for the futures game than the All-Star game for probably 7 years now.
Yeah. You know what it is? I used to be more of the traditional fan, and it's probably for me the last 2 or 3 years I've been more excited by the futures game. Some of it is you see all these guys. I think it was Royals Review, which is one of the SB Nation blogs, did a really good point about the All-Star game, which is 20 or 30 years ago, when you only saw these players during the All-Star game, you know, particularly guys who are on a mediocre team or a bad team that didn't make national TV, it was like such an opportunity to see these players that you just never saw. You know, now if you have a package or MLB TV, we see these guys all the time. You know, whereas the futures game, you get to see players that you've only heard about, and you kind of get to ooh and ah. Like, I remember when Brett and I went to the futures game at Citi Field, and we saw Christian Yelich for the first time. You know, we saw Miguel Sano. We saw Xander Bogaerts. That was really exciting for me. I know it was exciting for Brett, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
Absolutely. I remember that with Eloy Jimenez last year, because you heard sort of the Paul Bunyan-esque tales, and then he goes out and hits the monster home run. He jumps over a fence practically and catches a ball. I mean, yeah, Futures game is really great. So on that note, we're going to discuss several relevant topics. We're at the traditional midway point of the season. We're actually a little bit past it if you're just going by games, but the All-Star break is sort of the arbitrary midpoint in the season. So we're going to talk about the BP midseason valuations, which Mike had go up on the site. They're updated through July 4th. There's a big spreadsheet. You can check all that out. We're going to talk about those. We're also going to dig a little bit into Brett's TDG 500, which is up at thedynastyguru.com. Everybody should go check out that. That is the holy grail of dynasty lists. Brett, on a scale of 1 to 10, how exhausted are you after putting that monster together?
I'm pretty tired, but I'm venturing on.
So we're going to discuss that a little bit as well. So first, a little bit of housekeeping. You can read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read all of our content. If you do the super premium membership, you get access to the Bat Signal. It's our personalized fantasy answering service. We've gotten more Bat Signal questions this week than I can remember in a long time. So keep sending them in, and we'll keep answering them. You can follow us on Twitter. Brett is at Brett Sayer BP. Mike is at Mike Gianella, and I am at George Bissell. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. If you like the show, you want to support us, go leave us a rating, go leave us a review. Every single one of those helps us out tremendously. So wherever you get your podcast from, make sure you go do that. Let's start off with the TDG 500, Brett, and this is your project. There are other sources who have input, but this is your list, and I think I have to start with two obvious names, and these are the guys who I think jumped more than I can recall any names in the past couple of years, and that's obviously Aaron Judge and Cody Bellinger, a pair of rookies who've really taken the league by storm. And Judge jumped 190 spots to number 28 on the list, and Cody Bellinger jumped 157. He's in the top 50 now at number 41. So can you walk us through sort of the process of how you go about jumping a guy up that high? Because there are just so many factors to consider, but what were some of the things that you took into account when you were jumping Judge and Bellinger up in the dynasty rankings?
Yeah, it's really, I mean, it's the same thing with anybody else. It's a combination of current performance level, projected performance level, age, and track record. So, you know, there's no real tried and true formula for any of this. It's analysis and sort of gut feel to an extent, you know, based on having played in dynasty leagues for years and years. But the whole thing is meant to be a context neutral list, which I think some people reading it lose sight of a little bit. That's the challenge of making a dynasty list, because you're going to have a different list if you're a rebuilding team, just like you'd have a different list if you're a contending team. And I could give good examples of that on the list, especially as you get further down.
We used to use this with a guy like David Ortiz. You know, depending on where your contention cycle is, his value could be dramatically different. And I think sort of Rich Hill on the pitching side is sort of the de facto name now, right? Those are two kind of veteran guys where the value swings dramatically, you know, in recent years based on where you are in a dynasty.
Yeah. I mean, those are good names to use. Just kind of scrolling down here and looking through some of these others, you know, if you get down to like the 120s, I mean, I have Cole Hamels and Bradley Zimmer pretty much neck and neck in this list. Clearly, if you're a rebuilding team, you'd rather have Zimmer. And I think if you're a contending team, you'd rather have Hamels. So it's, you have to look at it through the lens of where your team is, but it's really meant to be context neutral. So it's meant to be meant to toe the line between contending team and rebuilding team, and just look purely at from a value proposition.
Yeah, so this is obviously a dynasty list, but Mike, I want to get your thoughts on these two guys, and I guess we could start with Judge. We've talked about him a lot this season, but he won the home run derby last night. You know, he's not even squaring balls up and hitting them out of the park, and he's sort of that face of baseball narrative has already launched. And do you get the sense that in a redraft league, this is about as good as it's going to get for a guy like Aaron Judge? Like, there's no way this could get better, right? I mean, at this point, he's the number one hitter in the American League, on pace to earn over $40.
Yeah, and you know, if you go into the PFM, he's the number one player in mix, too. He's like the second best player behind Max Scherzer. How can it get better? And, you know, my thing about Judge is I don't want to say he's going to get exposed, because I think he mostly is what he is. It's more that at some point, you know, he's just not going to hit 30 home runs, you know, in a little bit over half a season all the time. I mean, that's kind of the best way to put it. He's going to go through slumps. He's going to go through periods where, you know, he's just not hitting or like he's not figuring it out. It's almost impossible for someone to have half after half like this. And I'm not saying in a way that I'm saying this is a fluke and he's going to stink. I'm saying it more in a way that it's almost impossible for any player to do this. You know, so somebody brought up a good example. I think it was Miguel Cabrera a few years ago had 30 home runs in the first half. you know, Miguel Cabrera is one of the greatest hitters I've ever seen, and he had 13 or 14 in the second half. It's just something that happens. It's a law of averages. Reggie Jackson in 1968, I believe, it was 69, similar thing, 38, 39 home runs in the first half, 10 home runs in the second half. It's just something that happens. So, you know, if you have Aaron Judge, you know, hats off, and maybe he hits 55 to 60 home runs. If he finishes with 45 or 40, you shouldn't – 45 is a better number. You shouldn't be too surprised by that.
Right.
Or saddened by it. I mean, that's based on where you drafted him or valued him at the beginning of the season. I mean, that is a slam dunk. Even at 40 home runs, it's a slam dunk.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, unless you traded away a bunch of power, you know, thinking that Aaron Judge was going to do the same thing or get better in the second half, you're right, Brett. It's all gravy.
Yeah, I wouldn't advocate trading Aaron Judge necessarily, but I'm not saying you rule it out entirely. I think there's a case to be made. And like from a dynasty context, Brett, he's already 25 years old. So is that maybe something that pushes him a little bit lower on this list? Or did you take that into consideration at all when you were ranking him? Because that's definitely a factor. It's not like he's 20 or 21.
Sure. I mean, it's definitely a factor. I mean, if you talk about him and Bellinger, if they swapped ages... they would be in very different positions on the list. I mean, just I had someone in the comments who was asking why Aaron Judge was not in the top five on this list.
Yeah.
Which I get being excited about Aaron Judge, but, you know, Carlos Correa is number four on this list. He's been doing this for a couple of years, and Carlos Correa is 3 years younger than Aaron Judge. You know, the age makes a difference, and the profile makes a difference. And Judge is not – I really have a hard time believing that Judge is a 300 hitter. Also think he's not going to really steal bases, so that leaves him as a power threat. And we've talked about it on the show. I wrote it in the intro to the 500 that, you know, with the environment change, the guys who are power only become slightly less valuable. It's a slightly different proposition because 30 home runs in 2017 is not what 30 home runs was in 2015. And I'm sure Mike can speak to this in more detail when we go into the valuations, but it's a different game. It's changing, and we just have to be cognizant of that.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. We've talked a lot about Aaron Judge on this podcast, but I think he's deserved it. I mean, with his performance and then how we go forward from a fantasy standpoint. So definitely wanted to talk about him and Bellinger real quick. The other name I do want to bring up is Miguel Cabrera. He's dropped 24 spots. He's down to number 42. He was in the top 20 in the preseason. Obviously, he's getting up there in age, but if you own Miguel Cabrera in a dynasty league, Brad, I mean, what are you doing at this point? Because it feels like if you try and deal him, you're not going to get, you know, the value you would have 6 months ago. So it feels like he's one of the more difficult guys to assess at this stage in the game, right? After the way he struggled in the first half?
Yeah, I own Miguel Cabrera in a dynasty league on a team where I'm probably not going anywhere this year, and I'm going to sell off probably a couple of older pieces, and I am not even putting Cabrera on the block. If I own him in a keeper dynasty league, I am not moving him at all right now, unless someone wants to give me, you know, pretty close to true Miguel Cabrera value, just because I think Cabrera is the kind of hitter who I think there's a good chance this is related to his injury issues. And two, even if it's not, all it takes is a month or two of Miguel Cabrera like performance, and then you've got an asset that is far more tradable than it is now. I mean, we have to look that far to see an example of this. I mean, think about what Andrew McCutchen's trade value was 6 weeks ago in a dynasty league, right? And think about what it is now. You know, 6 weeks can do a lot, even for a veteran in a dynasty league, if that veteran has that name recognition and has that star power.
Mike, in a redraft, what are you doing with Miguel Cabrera? Are you holding tight a little bit longer here, like Brett says, or are you kind of pulling the trigger if you have the opportunity to get out?
I think it's the usual thing in a redraft in a position like this, and unless you can get most of the value back, the time to sell on him was probably like 4 to 6 weeks ago. At this point, you've got to hang on and just hope that there's more in the tank. I just don't like the idea now. You know, you've sat there, you've waited, and then all of a sudden now you say, well, you know what, I'm just going to trade him for 50 cents on the dollar. You're pretty much stuck at this point unless you get back close or pretty close to preseason value.
Yeah. All right, so the last thing I want to discuss real quickly on the Dynasty Guru 500 list, which Brett put up, it is up at thedynastyguru.com. Everybody should go check that out. I want to talk about one prospect because he has – I think maybe his stock has increased more than any other player in baseball right now, and that's Ronald Acuna of the Atlanta Braves. He's an outfielder. He's 19 years old. He's hitting like 400 in Double A. This is exciting. He rose 110 spots. I mean, Brett, you had him pretty aggressive in the preseason ranking. Now he's in the top 75 on your list. How excited should fantasy owners be about Ronald Acuna? Because, I mean, I wouldn't expect him to debut this year, but man, he's not giving the Braves much reason to keep him down, is he? He's been outstanding.
He's awesome. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, I've been pretty aggressive on Acuna for the past couple of times we've done this list. I mean, he was inside the top 200 coming into the season, even though he had what, like 110, 120 full season at bats?
Yeah, he got hurt last May and missed a lot of the year, but he had been great before that and then was good when he came back. So, yeah.
His upside is just bananas. I mean, he's really good. The question is, can he hit enough to tap into the type of profile he could have? And I think he can. I mean, he's been doing it this year. He may not be a 300 hitter, but if he's a 270 or 280 hitter, I think you're looking at a you know, potential first round pick once he develops, if everything goes according to plan. Yeah. Even though he's performing really well in Double A, we're still a little ways from that. I don't think we see him before midseason next year. And you know, on top of that, as we've learned, the new Braves Park is not a bad place to hit. So lots of reasons to be excited about Ronald Acuna.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we talk mostly redraft on this show, but I think from a dynasty standpoint, this is a guy you want to circle and make every effort, because if you haven't gone out and gotten him already, this is probably your last chance. I mean, he just appeared in the Futures game.
Just real quickly, I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm looking at his stats. He's sixth in WOBA in the Southern League. You know, we mentioned he's 19 years old. The five guys ahead of him are 27, 25, 24, 27, and 25. I mean, that's really what makes what he's doing so impressive.
You're not supposed to be able to do this. I mean, we talked a little bit about him with Jeff Paternostro last week, and it's just no one does this, and Acuna is doing it. So he's an insane talent. So
yeah, if he were a league average hitter at this age, you'd probably look at him and be like, wow, that's pretty good. Like, he's holding his own as a teenager
right
in Double A, but he's doing so much more than that.
No,
I mean, just the fact that he got to Double A. I mean, he was only in High A for 5 weeks, and then the Braves were like, "Oh, fuck it, let's just bring him up to Double A."
I remember we'd get all the tweets from David Lee, who's down there in Georgia, and he covers Rome, and he'd tweet out and he'd be like, I've never seen a guy like Ronald Acuna before. Like, the amount of power he can generate for such a small dude is kind of off the charts. So go pick up Ronald Acuna. That's the last note. So make sure you go over to thedynastyguru.com, check out Brett's list. It's the Dynasty Guru's top 500 dynasty list. Make sure you go do that right now. So let's dive into the midseason valuations. Mike, this is your outstanding series, which is up at BP right now. It came out last week, I believe, at the end of last week.
Yeah, that's correct. This week I'm planning on doing a Tout Wars, not just my team, but kind of across the leagues, like a little review. So that was last week.
Awesome. Yeah, so just click on Mike's author name, and you'll be able to find it there under his stuff. So let's start on the American League side with the hitters, guys. And, you know, we touched on Aaron Judge. There are some other notable names here. Elvis Andrews is up near the top. Jose Ramirez is number four. He's on pace to earn $34. And Mike and I were talking before we started recording about just how crazy it is that Jose Ramirez is as good as he is, because, man, I didn't think he'd be this good. I mean, even his most ardent supporters, I think, have to be blown away by what he's doing at this point, right? I'll start with you, Mike. Just it's hard to believe this is real at this point, right? Like, I don't know what else to say about Jose Ramirez. He's surpassed every expectation I had.
Yeah, we were talking about this before the show, and even before you had jumped on, Brett. I think what we were expecting from Ramirez this year was, you know, more maybe a drop off a little bit across the board. We all thought he was a legitimate player, but I thought he'd hit like 280, you know, still have the good contact. Power would remain about the same. Steals would drop off a little bit. And you'd have a solid, you know, an AL only, like low 20s, maybe mid 20s earner. I didn't expect him to be the fourth best player in AL only. And I certainly didn't expect the power. Now, I know some of that is the baseball and everything else that's happening. But still, you know, there's some players who had that contact profile who didn't just start automatically hitting home runs. And, you know, that's so I'm still surprised. Jose Ramirez is just an excellent ball player. And sometimes when you have that, when you have someone who is just excellent and skilled, the roto stats, you know, or the statistics just kind of bump up on their own. You know, a good example of that a little bit to some degree, and, you know, he did it earlier. You know, Mookie Betts was like that. You know, Mookie Betts in the minors wasn't a guy I was necessarily looking at to be a 30-30 player. But, you know, here we are. You know, Mookie Betts is someone who no one really doubts now. You know, he's fifth overall in AL only. You know, if he finishes second or third, you know, at the end of the year, he did it last year, we just won't be surprised.
Brett, you kind of hammered the George Springer points last episode 2 weeks ago, and he's in this latest update, he's on pace for a $30 season. But I do want to talk about his teammate Carlos Correa as well, because this Houston Astros lineup is, I mean, they scored 19 runs on Sunday. I mean, they're so good, and the counting stats alone are going to propel these guys to the top of the American League. But is it more surprising that Correa is on track to be a $30 player, or George Springer is going to get the $30 without any speed, really? I think he stole one base in the last 2 weeks, his first of the year, so he's tied with Brian.
I think he stole two in one game.
Oh, he did? Right? He had two?
Isn't that? And then he got caught stealing again and then hasn't run since.
He had two.
There we go.
The thing that surprises me most is that Carlos Correa is on pace to earn $30 with not a single stolen base.
Yeah.
But that just shows how great of a hitter Carlos Correa is. I mean, the dude, he's got a 979 OPS. He's hitting 325. He's not striking out. He's got 20 home runs already. He is incredible. The whole team is unbelievable to watch. Like, it is unbelievable.
Josh Reddick is a $26 earner right now. I mean, just being in that lineup isn't enough.
It's the counting stats, right? I mean, Correa is on pace to clear 110 runs and 110 RBI. Maybe even clear 120 RBI. I mean, that's nuts. I mean, I'm doing this off the top of my head. I don't remember. I believe the last player to have 120 runs and 120 RBI was Josh Donaldson. And I wanted to say that was like 2 or 3 years ago, and it hadn't happened for a couple of years before that. So given the offensive environment, this is, you know, a lot compared to what we've seen. But as we've seen, the offensive environment is going up.
Mike, we've talked a lot about the impact of speed on the game, and I think nowhere is that more prevalent than in what Cameron Maben grades out as in these valuations. I mean, he leads the American League with 24 steals. Elvis Andrews is right behind him with 20, and he's I think, number three on this list. But Maben's at $26 right now, and that's before Mike Trout comes back, which should help boost his runs scored if he can continue to get on base and stays in that leadoff spot. But, you know, just maybe you could talk a little bit about the impact speed has had and then what you'd expect from Maben going forward. Because I think if you just asked fantasy owners to pick, you know, the 10 best hitters in the American League from a fantasy standpoint, I don't think Cameron Maben would be on the front of anyone's brain. But he's there in reality.
Well, no, you know, nobody would have picked him. Although, you know, the caveat there with Maben is that if you had predicted health and if you had also predicted, you know, that he could, you know, we knew he could run. Like, so him running is a surprise. You know, him being on pace for close to 50 steals is a surprise. You know, I think you would have looked at 25 to 30, assuming full health. You know, but I'm kind of looking at this now. I'm sorting through the players who, you know, are in double digits in steals, and it's a very short list, and I believe it's an even shorter list in the AL than the NL. So what's happening with that value there is you have a guy like Maben who, yeah, he's got runs, but his batting average is actually subpar, and he's losing a little bit there. And he's still on pace to earn $26. Like that's the impact a stolen base guy can have in you know either league. You know, Billy Hamilton and D. Gordon are the obvious players. They're the guys that we look at, and you know we ooh and ah, and we're like, wow, you know, it's amazing how much value that they have. But in the AL, someone like Maben is really having that impact. You know, if you go down a little bit, you mentioned Elvis Andrus. Lorenzo Cain is somebody whose numbers overall don't seem spectacular, but those 15 steals are having an impact. And you know, Andrelton Simmons, you know, the home runs are interesting, but it's those steals that are propelling him to, you know, also a season where he's a top 20 player in the American League. Steals are really having this impact, you know, not just with the top guys, but on some other players in a sneaky way that I think a lot of people who don't study this like I do, you know, don't even realize.
So while Mike was talking about Cameron Maben and Elvis Andrus, I went and play indexed the stat, Brett, that you were talking about with the 120 runs and 120 RBIs. And you're exactly right. Josh Donaldson in 2015, he had 122 runs and 123 RBIs. Do you know the last player to accomplish that feat?
My guess would be Ryan Braun, but
no, it was not. It's someone who just hit their 600th home run.
Ha ha, Big Al.
It is. 2009, he had 124 runs and 135 RBIs with the Cardinals.
He was so good.
Oh, yes. So this is from the Baseball Reference Play Index. Do you want to hear the craziest one? Alex Rodriguez, 2007, he had 143 runs and 156 RBIs. He had 54 home runs that year. He batted 314. Those were the good old days. All right, that's enough of that. Is there anyone else you guys want to talk about on the American League hitter side? Because I have one other name, and that's Manny Machado. But is there anyone, before we get to Machado, is there anyone else you guys want to hit on before we kind of move forward?
I don't think so. I mean,
okay.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
The guy I'll hit on quickly is Xander Bogaerts, five home runs and nine steals and still on pace to earn 26 in AL only. And, you know, that's just a product of, you know, having some speed, but, you know, the average, the runs batted in, he's just doing a little bit of everything, and, you know, it's helping him.
Yeah, I'm surprised to see Justin Upton so far down on this list, but that, once again, the impact of power league-wide. So Machado, he is on pace to earn $12. His average price in an auction was $39, so he's on average losing about $27 right now. Over the last week, he kind of picked it up. He batted over 400 with a couple home runs in the last week here, but it's been really disappointing here for Machado so far this year. He's got four steals, but not doing a whole lot else. So he's not bad. Like, I don't know how to describe what we're seeing from Machado, because it's not like he's terrible, but you just haven't gotten what you paid for, I think, would be the right way to look at this. Mike, what are your expectations for Machado going forward? Because I think he's going to be fine, but I don't think you're going to get back what you paid for him in an auction.
No, I mean, it's almost impossible at this point.
Yeah.
I think he'll have a good second half. You know, the power's been there. You know, he is running a little bit more than – well, he's running more than the year Brett and I had him when he had no steals. But the average should come back. But that's the thing. If the average comes back, so if he finishes with like a 245 batting average, that's where he's really, you know, taking the hit on his value. He's just getting – he's getting killed there. He's because of the quantity of at bats, he's lost slightly more in batting average than Byron Buxton.
It's not great. You know who has been bad that I didn't expect to be bad this year? Kyle Seager. I mean, he's batting 250 with 10 home runs, one steal. Not a lot of counting stats. He's kind of had an ugly year. We talked about Miguel Cabrera. You know, there's a ton of guys we could highlight in the American League side, but we need to keep this train rolling. Let's move over to the pitchers. And obviously on the American League side, you have Chris Sale, who's he struck out 166 batters so far this year. He's on pace for 300, which would make him, nearly a $50 earner. What do you think he finishes at, Mike, if you had to ballpark it right now? What do you think Chris Sale finishes?
Earnings or strikeouts?
Both.
I'd say he'll finish with around 300 strikeouts. I'm gonna guess under, just because he might tire a little bit in the second half. The Red Sox might try to rest him a little, so I'm gonna guess 295.
Okay.
Earnings will fade too, just because, you know, I've kind of talked about this before. It's really difficult for pitchers or for anyone to sustain this kind of value. So I'll put him at $42 at the end of the season, which is still really good. I mean, that's not saying he'll slip at all. It's just saying that, you know, he could have one or two of those outings that are just kind of and, you know, wind up falling down to that level.
Yeah, his ERA is not spectacular. It's still really good, but it's not.
Well,
crazy,
I mean, it's
low.
A Chris Sale MO. It's a great whip. It's a lot of strikeouts. It's a good ERA. You know, where he's really picking up this year is wins. He always on the White Sox at all. Didn't he have 9 wins last year? Or am I like thinking, you know, something else? But he never really got a lot of wins with the White Sox. Well, he never got a lot of wins with the White Sox.
Brett, are we underrating Corey Kluber? Because I went back today earlier and I looked at his numbers and they're fantastic. I mean, he hasn't pitched as many innings as Chris Sale, but when he's out there, I mean, I think his last 5 starts, he struck out 10 or more. I mean, Corey Kluber, should we be talking about him more as probably the second best pitcher in the American League right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think he is the second best pitcher in the American League, but, you know, it's still quite a drop off from Chris Sale.
Oh yeah.
You know, and I don't know whether we would be talking about that as much if Dallas Keuchel was healthy and continuing to do what he was doing. We kind of jumped over him, but he was fantastic before he got hurt, and, you know, hopefully he's back in the next 2 weeks or so. But I think Kluber is the easy number two starter in the American League.
I think Michael Fulmers impressed me. He doesn't strike out a ton of guys, but he's been generally really good this year. Let's see. Luis Severino. That's a good one. Who would you rather have for the second half, Brett? Michael Fulmer or Luis Severino?
It's really tough because on talent, I'd take Severino, but he's just going to be approaching uncharted territory, and I think the Yankees probably rest him a little bit when they can in the second half. So I probably Fulmer, but I don't feel good about it.
Taking into account health concerns, Mike, who would you rather have Jose Berríos or James Paxton?
Wow.
I didn't say this was going to be easy.
Well, I'm not a big Paxton fan, as you know, but if you had asked me this, I would have said, Paxton. I wouldn't have even blinked. Mm. I'll still take Paxton, but it's really close. I could see an argument the other way if you think Berríos is going to hold up. The other thing about Berríos is I'd still like to see a full season from him at this level before I completely buy in. Hopefully we've seen inconsistency from him before. I worry a little bit, not a lot, but I worry a little bit about the second half fade, or particularly in September.
Brad Peacock or Eduardo Rodriguez?
Eduardo Rodriguez.
He looked good in his last rehab start the other night, so I'm on board there. Last one. Let's see. Let's go with a pair of Rays who are right next to each other in the evaluations. Jacob Faria or Alex Cobb?
I like Faria just because of the upside. And I know we talked about him. I don't think Brett was on the show. We talked about him. I understand the downside with Faria, but I still feel like there's enough upside there that I'll take him over Cobb.
Yeah, I think it's going to take a little while for the league to figure him out, but it could get rough once they do. But it might take a few months.
By the way, before we move on, Chris Sale, I was completely wrong. He had 17 wins last year. I was thinking of some previous seasons, but he never won 9. His lowest total, the once he got established as a starter, was 11, and that was way back in 2013.
One other note on the pitching side for the American League.
I just want to point out one thing real quick before we move on.
Yeah.
I would take Cobb over Faria.
I knew you would.
That doesn't surprise me.
I knew you would. I knew it.
And it's not just because of Faria. Yes, I think he's going to get exposed. But what I don't know when that's going to be. I mean, he could fake it for another 2 or 3 months.
Right.
But Cobb has been... Cobb's been very good since a not-so-great April. So he's been better recently than his stats suggest. I mean, the strikeouts aren't quite there, but, pretty much everything else has been. He's been more or less Alex Cobb of old, which is really great to see, because he was quite good before he got hurt.
He has those outings, like, you can see it. When he's really locked in and he's got the changeup and the off-speed stuff working, he's pretty much unhittable. Like, that last start against the Red Sox, he was filthy for a while. So, yeah, I'm with you there on that one. Anybody else in the American League pitching landscape that we need to talk about? I've beaten Jason Vargas and Chris Devensky into the ground throughout this year on this podcast, so... I don't think there's anyone.
I just want to mention, because I always mention him, and I know he'll fade, but Craig Kimbrell is right now the second best pitcher in the American League. He should fade a little bit, but what a first half! And I've said this before, the Baseball HQ guys, and I forget who wrote the article, they were right about him. They cited his struggles last year with that knee injury and coming back from that. And they believe that was behind him. He was healthy. That was scoped. He was taken care of. And, it sure looks like that right now. This might be the best we've ever seen of Kimbrel, because even with the Braves, when he was striking out like about 17 per 9, he was still walking some guys. He's not even doing that now.
Yeah, he was maybe the only other guy I wanted to bring up. Oh, Justin Verlander. Any shot, he turns it around. Like, if you had to put it on a scale of like 1 to 10 right now, what is your confidence level in Justin Verlander at least salvaging something out of this year? I don't know what it looks like, but any hope here for Justin Verlander, guys?
Yeah, I'm not out on Verlander. I mean, it's gonna take more than, given what we've seen from him in the past. And he's had spurts of this. It's gonna take more than this to get me. All that concerned. He's still missing bats at a rate that is pretty good and pretty in line with what he's been doing recently. I mean, he's just been he's just been consistently not great. It's not like he had a good month here and there. He's just I feel like he's sort of been consistently like this. He's had starts that are all over the place. I mean, he got lit up. The other thing, and I wish I could do this on the fly because I was looking at this the other day. He gave up 9 runs in 4 innings to the Indians on April 15th, and then 7 runs in 3 1/3 innings to the Indians on July 2nd. So if you just look at his stats against everybody but the Indians, he kind of looks like Justin Verlander. So maybe just don't start him against the Indians.
Didn't he suck against them last year too?
Yeah, I mean like... he's had two decent starts against the Indians, so it's probably I say it mostly tongue in cheek, but he's had those two bad outings, but other than that, I mean, he's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 13 of his 18 starts, he's allowed 3 runs or fewer, and he's still striking out guys. So, you know, I think Verlander is going to be okay. I mean, I don't think anyone was expecting to see 2010, 2011 Verlander come back through that door, but I think a tick up from here on out is reasonable to expect.
I agree with that. Let's move to the National League side. Let's start with the hitters. Stop me when you're surprised by a name you see at the top of the valuation spreadsheet. Paul Goldschmidt, Trey Turner, Charlie Blackmon, Bryce Harper, Joey Votto, Daniel Murphy, Ryan Zimmerman, maybe a little surprising, Marcell Ozuna, D. Gordon, Travis Shaw. I didn't expect that. Those are your top 10 right now. So... I guess we have to start with. Do we have to start with Travis Shaw? I mean, what's going on? He's hitting .297, 18 homers, 7 steals. I didn't think Travis Shaw could do this. what do you guys think about Travis Shaw going forward? Because it feels to me like I'm waiting for that moment when he starts to revert to the guy we saw in Boston for the last couple of years. And it just hasn't happened yet, which is weird. The longer it goes, the scarier it gets that it's not going to happen.
I look at Travis Shaw and I think about when people say that certain players have National League bat speed.
Is that a compliment?
No. No. But I mean, I think part of it is him hitting slightly over his head. I think part of it is just Miller Park. He wasn't all terrible for the Red Sox when he was up. I mean, I believe he had, and I'm gonna look this up while I'm talking so I can know exactly what I'm talking about. But I believe he had a good stretch followed by a very bad stretch in Boston when he came up.
But he got benched for Pablo Sandoval in September. Like, okay, there's no way to sugarcoat that. Like, it happened.
No. Just hear me out. April and May, before he was adjusted to, he was hitting .292, .358, .508. Mm-hmm. This was the first 2 months of 2016 with Boston. He is hitting .299, .367, .570 this year. They're not all that different, especially when you take into account ballpark. So pitchers can adjust to Travis Shaw, but maybe he's made this latest adjustment and maybe he can continue, some along the lines of this level of performance. I'm buying Shaw to a decent extent at this point.
Mike, Joey Votto, okay? Not only is he criminally underrated, I think, like, when we look back 50 years from now or whatever, it's going to be amazing to people that we didn't appreciate Joey Votto more. But on the year, he's hitting .315. He has 65 runs scored, 68 RBI. I believe he leads the National League in RBI. I think he's close if he doesn't lead it.
There's a couple people ahead of him.
Goldschmidt, I think, is leading the NL.
Yeah,
I think.
It's close though. Like, it's, yeah, he's right there. He has 26 home runs, which is more than he's ever had in a first half in his career. He's also stolen three bases. I feel like we're getting a career year here with Joey Votto. It feels that way to me. Do you guys agree with that? That this feels like the year he just kind of blows away the non-Goldschmidt field.
Well, he's also got a career low strikeout rate, which is
he's nuts.
Which is hilarious. His previous career low strikeout rate for a full season was 17.3%. That was all the way back in 2008. He's at 10.9% this year. He is unconscious at plate. It's, you know, I adore Joey Votto, and this is the best I've ever seen him, and he just looks all kinds of locked in at this point.
Here's the other thing. Isn't he a fantastic second half hitter? I mean, the last 2 years, I just have his numbers from last year in the second half. He hit .398 with 15 home runs in the second half last year. So he's kind of been a guy who starts slow and then really heats up as the season goes on. So that's what gives me sort of hope. I know that's, I don't know how to describe it. There's no real evidence to back that up, like just saying he's a second half hitter, but he's kind of done this for a few years now. So it feels to me like he's only going to get better as the year goes on. So I'd be doing all I could to go get Joey Votto. That's the guy I want to hitch my wagon to if I'm going for a title. That's just me.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, did you have any Joey Votto thoughts? Brett and I talked about
it. No, the only thing I was going to say is that, you know, it'd be great if he were, you know, if you want to, you know, split hairs, if you were hitting .337 like he did in 2012 on top of all this, that would be awesome. But that's such a minor complaint. With all this power, it's not going to matter. He's still going to, you know, you're right. From a fantasy standpoint, he's still going to have his best season.
Yeah, he's crazy good. Billy Hamilton, we've talked a lot about. I don't know what there is to say about Marcell Ozuna. I'm just kind of scrolling here. I gave my mea culpa on Adam Duvall last week and how I was probably wrong about him because he is hitting for average and I didn't think he could. Brett, have you changed your mind on Adam Duvall?
Yeah, I mean, there's more of a track record now. That profile is not a profile I don't think I'm ever going to be the first person to buy into, especially in this sort of offensive context. I mean, I'm not buying him as any sort of elite fantasy player or anything, but you know, I think at this point he's pretty legit.
Right. Like I think it's important to admit that like we kind of missed on it, but also it's kind of crazy that he's doing this. This was not an expected outcome.
Well, the thing is that you talk about this and it's a good golf analogy where when you see when you watch golf tournaments and you see where professional golfers putt the ball, you know, there's sort of the phrase that you miss a putt on the pro side of the hole, where, you know, you know what the putt is going to do, but if you miss it, you want to miss it on the side that gives you the easier putt coming back, so that you don't have a really tricky putt coming back. You know, to be honest, I'm comfortable not being the first guy to run out to players like Duvall, because I think in the grand scheme of things, I think you're going to be wrong more than you're right. And that's not, you know, that's not any fault of Duvall's. It's just not a great profile type. So, I'd rather miss out on a couple of Adam Duvall's than get overexcited about the genre in its entirety.
I believe that's the first golf reference we've had on this podcast. I'd have to go back to the tapes with Mao and see if he made any, but
no way Mao made any.
I was going to say, of all of us who have ever been on this podcast, including guests, he'd be at the bottom of the list.
Jake Lamb is kind of similar to Adam Duvall, I think, in terms of the profile. can we talk for a minute about Justin Turner here? Because if he didn't miss time, Mike, where do you think he's at in these valuations? Because he's at $26 in this latest update, but it's only 8 home runs. The batting average is absurd, .384. We talked a little bit about where we think he kind of ends up, maybe in like the .320, .330 range at the end of the year, but where do you think he finishes the season when you look back on it?
Well, I mean, that 320 or 330 might be low, because when we had that conversation, that was like 2 or 3 weeks ago. So if he finishes at, say, 340.
Yeah.
You know, and even if the power, you know, the funny about his power is that he snuck in a couple homers right before the break.
He did.
And, you know, he's somebody who, you know, we saw him hit for power last year in the second half. He could finish with 20 home runs. You know, particularly in this environment, if he does that with a .340 average and in that lineup where, you know, he should score runs, he should drive in runs, well, I could still see him finishing in the top 20 or 25. That wouldn't surprise me at all, especially because, you know, if I look at some of these names, you know, surrounding him, you know, Mark Reynolds is a guy more than Turner. I kind of expect to drop off. I expect Duvall. You know, I agree with Brett. I believe in him, but I expect him to drop off. The NL is funny. Like, unlike the AL, where I believe in a lot of those guys in the top 10, top 15, the NL has a few names of players who I don't expect to be in this top 10 or 15 in the second half. And, you know, even if Turner falls, he might not fall that much just because of some of these names ahead of him falling further.
All right. The Dodgers may add a bat, too. Like, if they bring in a JD Martinez to bat fifth, I mean, that also would help. Brett,
no, I am all in on Justin Turner.
Yes.
All in on Justin Turner.
Yes.
I think he's going to hit. I think he's going to hit 360. I think he's going to hit over 20 home runs. He's got over his last 20 games. I mean, he's been great anyway. He's 379, 517, 788. He's got 8 home runs and 5 strikeouts over his last 20 games. He is he's unbelievable, and why he needs to be talked about more. And Anthony Rendon have been just about the best hitters in baseball for the last 2 months or so, and I feel like they're not being properly appreciated.
No, exactly. Here's the thing. Like you said, Turner's a guy you have to watch every single day to really appreciate what he does. He literally never gives away an at-bat. He does not swing at garbage. It's really crazy to think that this is a guy who, like, 2 or 3 years ago was not worth anything. So it's wild. Do you think he finishes in the top, Brett, if you had to ballpark it, do you think he finished in the top 5 in the NL in valuations at the end of the year? Assuming he doesn't re-injure his hamstring. If he just stays healthy. Yeah, do you think he's a top 5 guy the rest of the year in the NL?
From here on out or at the end of the year?
That's a good question.
Because I don't know if he can get the playing time to get there, because I look at the top 5 and I don't think they're really going anywhere. I don't think he can pass, you know, Goldschmidt and Blackman and Harper and Votto and Murphy.
Let's say rest of season, who would you rather have? Because Daniel Murphy is, I think, what, 5 or 6 right now? Would you rather have Daniel Murphy or Justin Turner?
That's tough.
they're kind of very similar, but
They are very similar. I think I'd rather have Daniel Murphy in a batting average league, and I'd rather have Justin Turner in an OBP league.
Okay. Let's see. We didn't talk about Trey Turner. We haven't talked about him since he got hurt. Mike, what are you doing with Trey Turner here? Because it sounds like he's going to come back at some point, but
I think he'll be back next month. To give some context to that those at bats and the missed time, like when I put this update together, you know, he's right around where Goldschmidt is. You know, he's actually a little bit ahead of Harper. I'm talking about at-bats right now in terms of value. You know, he's ahead of Travis Shaw. He's a little bit behind Jake Lamb. So, you know, he's missed some time, but that'll more be reflected as we go along. But because this injury wasn't as serious as we initially thought it would be, I'm inclined to hold on to him. And again, this is – well, there's two things. First, it's that you don't want to – trade too much of that future value away. Like, you don't want to, like, take a hitter. You know, I'm trying to look for a good example here. Like, you don't want to say, okay, I'll take my Turner and trade him for Jay Bruce. Like, that's just giving up too much value, in my opinion. And then the other side of it, and this ties into that, it's those stolen bases. You know, he has 35 stolen bases. And, you know, he's doing everything we thought he'd do in the category and more. And I'm not suggesting he's not Billy Hamill in terms of the raw speed, but in terms of what he's doing with his speed and how he's capitalizing on that, he could be a 60-70 steal guy. I really don't want to move that unless it's an obvious win for me.
Look at that. Andrew McCutchen right there, $26, a dollar more than Cody Bellinger. All the people who wanted to bury Andrew McCutchen. Take that. Anybody, give me, each of you guys, give me a hitter that you're targeting, that you're expecting big things out of for the second half on the NL side. If you look through these valuations that you think could really make a difference for fantasy owners in the second half. Everybody loves these kind of topics, so I think I'll just open up the floor, whether it's like an Orlando Arcia or, Paul DeJong, someone who fantasy owners should be targeting, Ian Happ, you know, for example, someone like that who's maybe lower on this list but will make an impact.
I can't say Anthony Rendon, can I? I already said him. Do you know who else?
I think the perception of Rendon is not as high as where you have him in your head, though. You know what I mean? Like, I think you.
Well, that is true.
Right. That's a good point to make.
Yeah, I'll give you a lower down name just because that is what you just asked. If I told you that you could get a player who, since May 1st, is hitting 282, 394, 593 with 12 homers, 36 runs, 31 RBI, and three stolen bases for not nothing, but, you know, not anything that you'd particularly miss. How would you feel about that?
It's not Tommy Joseph, is it?
It's not Tommy Joseph. Okay, this player is not a first baseman.
Oh boy. Are you talking about Ian Happ?
I am not talking about Ian Happ. I love Ian Happ, but I'm not talking about Ian Happ. Mike, do you know who I'm talking about?
Nope.
Granderson?
I'm talking about Curtis Granderson.
I thought
Curtis Granderson was so bad in April that it is still hiding how good he's been since April has ended. So get out there, get Curtis Granderson for cheap if you can, before you aren't able to.
Mike, who's your guy?
I'm gonna go with Hernan Perez. He was somebody I was really cynical about coming into the year, and probably overly so. I still believe there's enough speed in him in the second half to go along with a profile where even if the power fades a little bit, there's going to be value in him. And he's just somebody that almost no one is even really talking about or thinking about. So, you know, from that standpoint, someone who's under the radar but has still had a decent first half, that's who I'm looking at.
Is anybody holding out hope for Jonathan VR?
Yeah.
Okay. Didn't you just trade him recently, I feel like?
I traded for him about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and then I traded him 3 or 4 days ago. So I traded for him specifically. This is a fair thing about VR. I traded for him specifically to rehab his value and then trade him for more than I traded to get him. I have Billy Hamilton on this Dynasty League team, so I'm not in a position where I need the speed. But I liked the proposition on VR. I think with more BABIP luck, I think he can be, you know, not what he was last year, but I think he could be what I think we were realistically expecting him to be coming into the season, which is, you know, a 250 hitter with 15 homers and 40 steals, which is, you know, I mean, that's essentially Starling Marte, but with no batting average, which is really pretty good in this environment. So I ended up dealing him and taking a little bit of a gain on him rather than holding out for more. But yeah, I'm not down on VR.
Here's the thing. Don't play in a dynasty league with Brett. He will run circles around you. It's not even fun. I've seen it. Don't do it. Whatever you do. All right. NL pitchers. We'll wrap up. This will be our quick 5 minutes or less here. You have your usual names at the top. You have Max Scherzer, Clayton Kershaw, Zach Greinke. I mean, nobody's really talking about Zach Greinke. I mean, we all kind of talk about him a little bit, but you know, if you just ask the average fan, I don't know if they'd be talking about him, but he's quietly had this really nice resurgent year. Mike, Zach Greinke, do you think he finishes the year in the top five in the NL among pitchers?
I mean, it's hard to say top five just because it's such a high bar, but top 10 at this point feels pretty safe.
All right. Brett, Jacob deGrom, he's pitching like a top five starter right now in the NL. Would you rather have him or, let's see, Alex Wood?
I'd rather have DeGrom.
Okay. I like Alex Wood.
I'd rather have DeGrom than anyone in the National League not named Scherzer or Kershaw.
That was kind of going to be my point. DeGrom's a little lower on these valuations because he had a stretch where he really sucked. But he's figured it out, folks. Mike, Jimmy Nelson, my boy, where do you... $23 he's on pace to earn right now. Do you think he finishes over $20 in terms of earnings?
No, I'm going to put him like between 15 and 20.
Okay. Would you rather have him or Zach Godley?
I'd still rather have Nelson.
Okay. Jimmy Nelson or Robbie Ray?
I'd rather have Ray.
Maybe, yeah. Okay. Let's dip a little lower here. Jake Arrieta's been bad. You know who's been really bad that I wanted to bring up? And I didn't earlier on the Dynasty Guru segment. John Lester, okay? Brett, you still have him at number 63 on that list. What are you doing with John Lester? Because he's been kind of inconsistent. He's had a good start sprinkled in here and everything, but his last couple have really been atrocious. Like in the last 2 weeks, I think his ERA is over 5. He got bombed on Sunday right before the All-Star break. I'm terrified with John Lester. Should I be terrified if I own John Lester?
No, you shouldn't be terrified if you own John Lester. I, you know, the strikeouts are all still there. I'm much less concerned about Lester than I am about Arrieta. But I still think Lester should win a ton of games with what should be a much better Cubs offense in the second half than in the first half. And, you know, I think, you know, the defense hasn't been what it was last year, but I think there's room for that to improve as well. So I'm really not particularly concerned about Lester.
All right, I don't want to make this a huge debate about John Lester. I feel like the strikeouts are masking, though, some of those underlying problems, like all of the home runs he's giving up. That's the way it feels to me when I look at him. Like, yeah, he's striking out a lot of guys, but hitters are more likely to strike out if they're swinging for the fences every time. You know what I mean? That's kind of the way I look at it. I might be wrong, but I don't know. Am I looking
at it wrong? I don't really see it as much of an issue. I mean, it's not like he's giving up more fly balls than usual.
Okay.
He's just giving up a noticeably higher home run to fly ball rate, and I think that stabilizes.
Or they unjuice the balls. All right. We'll wrap up on this. Who's a pitcher you guys like that you'd be targeting in a trade for the second half on the NL side of things?
Same concept. Somebody who's a little bit lower down on the list.
Can I say Curtis Granderson?
Again, does he pitch? He might be by the end of the year. The way the Mets are going,
maybe.
The way the Mets are going, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, what a rough season.
Does Rich Hill count?
I mean, people wrote him off like a few weeks ago, I feel like.
People really did write him off.
They were done.
He's been with him. He's been awesome.
For me, it's Aaron Nola. I feel like, you know, and I know it's a bit of a cheat because he's the 35th best pitcher in the NL, but you're not going to get the wins. But he's really looked good the last two or three weeks. He's, you know, some people are saying ace. That's an oversell if you're talking about a number one. He's not a true number one, but he, at his best, he's a number two. And in an NL only in particular, there's value in that, particularly with where he's perceived.
I'm going to go pretty much off the board here, and I'm going to go with Brock Stewart. He's way overqualified for what the Dodgers are asking him to do, like this mop-up role. I think either they trade him as a legitimate guy to somewhere else for help at the deadline, or they move someone else and they figure out a way to get him into the rotation. I don't know. I feel like Brock Stewart's going to matter in a deeper league. So he's pitched like 15 innings and he basically has a whip like under 0.5. So I like what Brock Stewart can do, and he might be more valuable as like their Devenski type guy. I don't know. We'll see what happens, but he's a guy I want to get on my team if I'm in a deeper league. All right. We've gone over an hour. This has been a hell of a show. We had some fun. Let's take a break and then we'll come back and wrap things up. And we're back. Thank you for listening to episode 141 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy podcast. Make sure you subscribe to Baseball Prospectus to read all of our content. You can do so with a one-year premium membership. If you sign up for the super premium membership, you get access to the Bat Signal. It's our personalized fantasy answering service. If you like what we do, if you like the content we produce, we have a really great staff at BP who's cranking out awesome stuff, not just on the fantasy side, but so many talented writers. So the best way to support us and BP is to do that. You can follow us on Twitter. Brett is at Brett Sayer BP. Mike is at Mike Gianella, and I am at George Bissell. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, wherever you get your podcasts from. The final BP Ballpark event is on August 5th. It's a Target Field. You can purchase your tickets on BP. There is a BP Ballpark event this weekend. It's at PNC Park in Pittsburgh. Tickets are not available. They're done. You can't get them. But if you follow us on Twitter, Mike is going, so you can get updates from Pittsburgh, which is going to be awesome. Mike, how excited are you for this event? It sounds like fun.
I've never been to PNC, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's a great park, and you know, I've got a number of friends who've been there and have raved about it. So, yeah, it should be fun.
Just, like, looking at the photos from the stadium, it looks incredible. Like, the view seems great. So, sounds like it's going to be fun. Cool. So, like we mentioned earlier in the show, Brett's TDG 500 is up at thedynastyguru.com. We have BP put out the prospect team put out the midseason top 50 last week. Make sure you go check all of that out. Mike's valuations are up there. So, tons of great stuff up at BP right now. So, that's going to do it for us.
Also, hold on. I will interject. By the time George doesn't know this, but by the time you listen to this podcast, you can go to BP as well to read the top 50 midseason fantasy prospect update, which is going up on Wednesday.
Yes, that is awesome. Very excited about this. Where's Dan Vogelback?
Dan Vogelback is missing.
No! No! Oh, no. Oh, that really hurt.
It's about time.
Oh, that really hurt. It cuts me deep.
He's not even in the honorable mention. I'm sorry, George.
Oh God. He lost the home run derby last night, by the way, in AAA. Very disappointing.
Yeah. Josh Naylor is my new Dan Vogelbach. So
he is a big man.
I've moved on.
He is a big boy.
He's a
hashtag beefy boy. Yes. That is That is fantastic. Oh, we also have the this is a cool feature. I did one for these. I don't know if you guys did one for this, but the top 50 busted prospect list. Did you guys do one for that? The staff piece?
I'm very excited to read this. This is going to come out on Thursday.
Yes. Okay, so this podcast comes out on Wednesday. You can read it on Thursday, like Fred said. But I wrote about Kyle Drabek. I wrote about the Space Jam aliens creating a pitching prospect. And if they did, it would be Kyle Drabek. So, yeah, basically.
You know they're called the Monstars, right?
Yes, I do.
The Space Jam aliens.
That's how I know them.
You say that like you're an alien.
Maybe I am. Did you think of that? All right, we've gone too far. The Monstars and Kyle Drabek. Do you know he was a top 15 prospect for like 2 years? What?
He was.
Oh.
Yeah, I remember that.
That was a good time.
I remember his dad.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you guys are old. Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah, I traded for his dad in the fantasy league once, so I remember.
Oh my god. Not good. Ah, oh, man. So that's it. We're done.
He hit his peak right about the same time The Simpsons did.
The mid-90s. All right. So, Brett, you're off for 2 weeks, right?
I am. I'll see you guys in August.
That's right. So no Brett, we're gonna have some fill-ins. Mike and I are still working out who those are gonna be. If you have any suggestions, like seriously, hit us up on Twitter. We'll reach out, whoever you come up with. All right. That's it. Thanks for listening, everybody. Hope you have a great week, and Mike and I will be back next week with a special guest. So long, everybody.
Bye.